From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. A lot of GOP news. A lot of weird conservative news about John Eastman being disbarred. I'm really upset about this John Eastman story. Yeah, because if you have an idea, it's the same analogy that Billy thought was bad, but I thought was a perfect analogy when it comes to this story. We'll get into it when we get into it. So Bob Ferguson took a play out of Bill Clinton's playbook, and I most certainly hope it's the right kind of play, because Bill Clinton had quite a few play, 9 of them, as a matter of fact, if the memory serves correctly, that didn't go over very well, and I have no idea why people don't talk about it to this day. Why is it that we don't talk about all of those women who came out against Bill Clinton? We talk about the women who came out against Donald Trump constantly.
Well, I think we've, out of respect, relegated former presidents to the pages of history. And we always try to look back on our history in a romanticized and sterilized version.
Okay.
With everybody, because everybody's got skeletons in their closet, all presidents, all leaders.
But you'll admit to me that Bill Clinton, it seems...
Oh, he was a dog!
Right, exactly.
Slick Willie.
But you might even say that he was more than just a dog, because what some of these women are saying is felonious, yeah, right? I mean, yeah, what some of these women are saying is really rough.
Yeah.
And so I think we should... This is my litmus test for TDS is are you as mad at Bill Clinton, or let us just say as you are at Donald Trump? Does that make sense? Do you have the same amount of ire for that person based on his extracurricular activities in the realms of, sexual assault as you do with Donald Trump?
I would say I can't look at him in the same lens, because that was bad. This is bad with regard to the former president Trump. He's back seeking leadership again. You know what I'm saying? Again, my point about delegating past presidents to the pages of history.
I'm not following this argument. That was bad.
What Clinton did was bad.
It is current present tense, right?
Clinton's not seeking my vote. I'd look at Trump and Clinton in the same light if Clinton was still seeking my vote, I guess.
Sure, but I mean, Bill Clinton, we just read that headline about Bill Clinton and Barack Obama trying to fundraise for...
Well, because he's a pillar of the Democratic Party.
So what I'm saying is there not an essence or a deep essence of hypocrisy where you're okay with this kind of sexual assaulter, but you're not okay with that kind of sexual assaulter?
That's
right?
A very fair question.
I'm not trying to gesture at hypocrisy.
No, I hear you. It's a very fair question.
If I saw Bill Clinton, I would be weirded out by his presence. I wouldn't go, hey, Slick Willie over there. I would go, that is a weird dude, right?
I guarantee you that someone at this event tonight for the Biden campaign will yell something horrific from the crowd. Every time Clinton speaks.
Really?
Every time Clinton speaks, someone yells a protest, I don't even say it on the air. They'll drop the R word and scream it from the crowd.
What's the R word?
Rapist.
You can say that on the air.
I try to be a little kinder. I bet something happens tonight. I bet somebody speaks up and protests tonight.
Yeah, maybe. I just think that there's a weird disconnect that people have, and being consistent is a really important thing. And if we're going to call one person out for it, we got to call everybody out for that same activity. So anyway, Bob Ferguson did this thing.
He's playing a different play, by the way.
Playing a different play altogether.
He's grabbing Republican points of view.
He had a political blunder a couple months back when he posted on social media. He said, I'm very grateful to have the support of the Seattle Police Chief Carmen Best. Right now, we all know, little issue with the old text messages going missing. Who could have possibly known that mine and the mayor's and the fire chief's and like 8 other people's would just go away? Yeah. Who could have possibly known during the whole,
And let's have the event at CHOP to really bring back the ghost of 2020.
So everybody reacted poorly to that. I reacted poorly to that. And so this piece that Danny Westneat wrote basically said that what Bob Ferguson is doing is he's doing the old Bill Clinton, which is where you come out and you say this one thing about this one thing, while out of the other side of your mouth, you're saying, I want $90 million new dollars in grants for police forces all across this fine state, right?
Well, you're going to sacrifice a few of your base voters, which you're never going to lose the bulk of that base, and you burn those votes to pick up a little something on the right.
Yeah.
You go after those law first voters. You throw them that little bone, right? You're spending some political capital in your deep, deep, deep solid base to go pick up the fringe that you seek on the right to try to not come across as this radical left Washington, radical leftist.
I mean, he is a radical leftist.
He is. He's doing some Slick Willie. They didn't call him just because of the 9 different women. That's not why they called him Slick Willie, because he really could. They called it triangulation.
Yeah.
You play your base against their base, and you come somewhere in between both worlds.
And you pick up whatever you might pick up along the way.
And it's going to cost you much less than your risk of losing on the left.
Well, so my read of Ferguson, though, in attempting to navigate this, is that you have to somehow justify to a significant amount of voters who are fundamentally anti-police that somehow voting for you, when you have promised something like $90 million in grants, somehow that is not part of, I understand that everybody's always expecting the state to always go D, right? Because that's largely the way that it goes. But sure. I think that what they don't account for is the people who are not Ds, who are the vicious socialists or whatever it might be. And so they say to themselves, there's no way I'm going to get on board with a guy who's engaging in this kind of behavior.
But you throw them that bone about law enforcement. You recognize that you went too far back in 2020. You swung way too passive.
I'm talking about the extreme leftists. Oh, I'm not talking about the other people.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about these. There's no way you convince the defund the police people that say, I went too far. No, they want you to go more far, right?
But they're never going to vote. They're never going to vote Republican. You're no risk of losing those guys. The extreme leftists, you have no risk of losing them.
I think we're on two different pages, my friend. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Then I apologize for not keeping track of your thoughts.
That's all right, my friend. But anyway, interesting trick from Bob Ferguson, and I think that he'll have an interesting election coming up. Laura Trump, the co-chair, is the least of the RNC's red flags. I don't know if anybody's had an opportunity to read about this, but apparently when they are looking at questionnaires, when they're trying to bring people into the RNC, one of the questions is, and I'm reading it verbatim, was the 2020 election stolen? That is one of the questions that they are asking people in order for them to get a job at the RNC. Now, we know from Ronna McDaniel, being that her former job was the head, when she came out, she said, he lost fair and square to Joe Biden. I'm thinking that what they're trying to do with the RNC is dismantle it. This is kind of like the revenge tour for Donald Trump, where he gets to go back in and he gets to ruin the institution that's trying to help him by basically filling it with infiltrators, right? We need to have this is a deeply paranoid kind of politicking, but you have to go and you have to fill it with infiltrators, fill it with people who agree with you and only you, and that way you get what you want. It's weird to see how fascist so many Americans have become. You know what I mean? How much they agree with, because that is a fascist tactic. You put people who are loyal to you in branches and places of government or within the party itself. That's Mussolini. That's Franco to a T, right?
You're saying how many Republican voters are okay with this?
Yeah, that they, right? They like this strategy. Yeah. Now, what I'm saying, when I say fascist, I don't mean it as a pejorative, but that is a fascist tactic to say, I will put people in these positions within the party who are loyal to me. Again, you can read about Pinochet, you can read about Franco, you can read about Mussolini. They all did the same action. And yet what I see from people in the GOP who say, well, it's a means to an end. At least we're going to get what we want.
Well, it's just part of the big lie, because when Laura Trump and her co-chair took over the RNC, they had a purge. They fire almost everybody at the RNC, and now they're massive staffing on a coast-to-coast basis. They're putting election deniers in every state, and election deniers in key positions. That's the battle plan, is to pump the fires on the last one was stolen. It's all about, and it's about election integrity. It's about poll watchers. It's about legal teams on the ground in every state to challenge results that aren't even in yet, because we just know they're going to cheat.
Are you afraid to call the RNC fascist, Spike? Is that what I'm hearing?
Fascistic tactics, sure.
I'll call them fascists if you don't want to.
I hate to pronounce them dead then. The RNC is dead. If they're all fascist now, RNC is dead as we know it.
Well, that's basically the argument that I would make to people, is that you no longer really have an RNC. It's been seeded away. If all of your campaign money is going towards Donald Trump, is that really the Republican Party anymore? If the sole goal of the RNC is to pump Trump, is that really the Republican Party anymore?
And the condition of membership is to back and promote the lie.
Exactly my point.
Then they're
right?
Fascists, I'll say.
At a certain point in time, you have to call something what it is. Now, if you want to go against the Democrats and you want to see their deep state, authoritarians or whatever, that's fine. We could have that conversation. Or if you want to talk about like the uniparty between the Democrats and the Republicans are both trying to do this, you can talk about that as well. My concern, what I see, just from the perspective of someone who's been studying politics for about a decade, is that what we're seeing now is a new kind of fascism. It's what I refer to as American fascism, where you have people who believe that in the pursuit of freedom and freedom from religious persecution and freedom from big government tyranny, they need to grab a hold of the reins of big government to control big government to protect them against other Americans. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
There is no such thing as a small government Republican anymore outside of maybe like three or four of them, outside of maybe who in Congress or in the Senate. It doesn't exist anymore. They want to grab the levers of power in the same way that any other political party might want to do so that they can live in a world in which they control the mechanisms and no one can have an affront to it. It's fear-based politics.
And because things are so broken, that's the only way to save what we have.
Exactly. I mean, it's kind of like Donald Trump's Bible pitch that he did the other day when he was like, we love God. God is
protect
good.
Protect all things. All references to God.
Exactly. We have to
make
protect
America
all this.
Pray
right,
again.
Exactly. So, and I understand that people get really like, ooh, Jack, you're calling all Republicans fascist. That's not the argument that I'm making. The argument that I'm making is that the Home Office certainly is looking a little goose steppy, is what I'm saying, right?
They all have to wear brown.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Right. Is that the Home Office, if that's the orders that you're giving out to the people who are coming in, if that's your litmus test, was the 2020 election stolen? That doesn't sound like freedom of expression. That doesn't sound like freedom. You know what I mean? That sounds like a very regimented way of thinking about the system. It's the same reason why I talk about Project 2025 often, because if you go and you read what their agenda is, if you're a member of the GOP, you would look and you would see and you would say, this doesn't sound like the GOP at all. You want to bring people in who are loyal to Donald Trump, not loyal to the Constitution? You want to bring in constitutional scholars to rewrite the Constitution? This sounds really rough, right?
Yeah, that's what the plan is.
This is the thing, is that I think a lot of people have had the wool pulled over their eyes, and they're so busy yelling and screaming about a geriatric who doesn't even remember what time it is that they're completely distracted to what's going on in their own homes. You know what I mean?
I do. And, and you had said to Billy earlier about the mixed messaging. Can this mixed messaging last for the RNC?
No.
And when Laura Trump says we need to vote early by mail.
Yeah, that was the other thing.
Right? So how is that going to gel with former President Trump?
Donald Trump's going out and he's telling people not to vote by mail.
Right.
He's telling people to vote in person because he's telling people that there are going to be people who are quote unquote poll watchers at the various polling stations.
Yep.
And then you have Lana Trump who comes out and she says, no, you need to vote early by mail. Now, I don't understand where the messaging is coming from on this, but this doesn't make any sense because the crux of Donald Trump's argument in 2020 is that voting by mail is what led to mail fraud. So then why is it that the position of the RNC is to vote by mail when Daddy is saying we need to vote in person and in mass?
Well, I hate to say this, but I have to give Laura Trump credit because she knows they got their clocks cleaned in the mail-in vote. Got their clocks clean. 90% of mail-in voting.
It's because they dumped them all, Spike.
These two messages are going to hit like freight trains at some point.
It's because that's how they did it, right? You didn't watch that documentary with Dinesh D'Souza where he lied. You know, it's funny about that movie, by the way. So many people have debunked that documentary, 2,000 Mules. How many lawsuits for slander, libel, or defamation has Dinesh D'Souza filed in court?
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
Not a single one.
Oh, really?
Not a single one. Why? Because he knows that if he has to go to court and he has to show, well, these are the lies that I told people about the election, it's going to look really bad because then it's going to be official record, right?
He's saying anything to a camera, he can't say it to a judge.
Moreover, Dinesh D'Souza makes this documentary called 2,000 Mules. And he goes around, he tells everybody that they used FBI technology, the same FBI technology that was used to find the people who murdered a little 8-year-old girl. Doesn't that tug on your heartstrings?
It really does.
Only problem with that story is that those guys had turned themselves in a month before that technology was actually used in Georgia. So Dinesh D'Souza is just lying about that for some strange and odd reason, lying about the murder of an 8-year-old girl for some bizarre, because he's a true American.
He makes his point. You're right.
And so a lot of people have debunked that documentary, which you still pay for, by the way. You have all this legal evidence that can prove that the election was stolen. And the one thing that you do with it is you charge $9.99 to go watch it. Sounds like a grift. Looking at my watch. What time is it?
Grifting time.
All right. So, this mail-in ballot thing is very, very interesting. I don't think that you're going to be able to convince anybody to. I think if you're a GOP voter, you're going to show up in person.
Can they stop the former president from sticking to don't vote by mail?
Can you stop him from finishing a Big Mac?
It's never been tried.
Can you stop him from eating an entire bag of Starburst?
To be fair, it's never been tried.
Can you stop Joe Biden from falling asleep before noon?
They have tried that.
You see what I'm saying? Doesn't work. Can you stop Joe Biden from falling when he walks downstairs that have been redesigned specifically so that there's shorter steps?
Shorter steps, less of them.
Then there's less of them so that he doesn't fall out. Nope, you can't do that, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, my friend. All right, so John Eastman is one of the lawyers that was involved with, you want to set this up for us, Spike? What was
sure, John Eastman was the legal mind that came up with the alternative electors theories.
Yes.
He thought that there was a provision in the Constitution through interpretation that the if the House of Representatives committed to verifying the vote, said we don't know, send it back to the states to clean up these issues, we could then have the states off. States would be able to vote themselves. Mm-hmm. Who won their by state legislators? Who won their electoral votes? Not by the vote of the people. That was a constitutional theory that Eastman came up with and pushed, and that was the onus of January 6th and stop the vote to count that day. Yada yada. So Eastman's being called to the carpet and is under threat of losing his legal license,
right?
Because he promoted this theory that was then put into practice by others. And various different legal maneuvers were done in various states, but Eastman came up with the concept. And I think you were saying earlier today, you don't think he should lose his license just for having the concept.
Well,
he didn't put it into action. Others did.
Okay, so if he had the legal theory, they can't, basically the way it breaks down is that a bunch of other Trump crony lawyers came to Eastman, who is a constitutional scholar, and they said, if we were to do it, how could we possibly do this within the quote-unquote bounds of the law? Because we all know that rules are meant to be broken. Am I right or am I right?
Or interpreted differently.
Yeah. So he says to himself, he's chewing on the back of a pencil, and he says, well, if I were to do it, theoretically the way you would do it is you would get it. You would do what they did in 1960.
Yeah, well, there were alternative selectors presented, yes.
And he goes, you do an alternate slate of electors, and then you'd swap them out, and then you would wait for the actual results to come in, blah, blah, blah. And so then those cronies then go out and enact that, but he didn't give the direct order, this is what you guys should go do. He was simply theorizing about it. My thought about it, can we fault somebody for having a devious plan when other people carry it out? Does that make sense?
That's a very fair question to ask.
As an example of that, you've got Antonin Scalia, who came up with the theory of the unitary executive, which was an extension of a theory that was proposed by Alexander Hamilton, because he saw how much power George Washington had in his little hands and his crooked teeth. And so he thought to himself, hey, wouldn't it be better if we had like a fascist king? And
get stuff done.
And everybody was like, no, Hamilton, go away. You smell bad. And so go be in a bad musical. And so if we think about it in that way, can we fault Scalia for having that legal opinion, even though we know it's wrong, for just drafting it up? Right.
And the same faults to Eastman. Can you fault him for having a different take than other people have?
Yeah, I might say so right now his license is being put on involuntarily inactive status. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, he's been ordered to pay $10,000 in monetary sanctions. He's probably going to lose that license for serious ethical violations warranting severe professional discipline. But in my mind, if he just concocted it, if I come up with the recipe for Parmesan chicken, mm-hmm. and then someone else makes it and they get everybody else sick, is it my fault?
No, you didn't use the bad ingredients. You didn't make the souffle.
Laura, are you following my logic on this? Is this bad logic? Because I thought about this long and hard, and I didn't even want to do this story because I thought people would hate me for it. But does that logic make sense?
I think that logic makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you have this idea. Well, you get the chicken, and you cut it open, and then you put the Parmesan in the middle of it, and then
how good were your instructions?
See, there you go.
You have to cook
the legal
chicken
gray
first.
Area.
Yeah.
See, there you go.
To a temperature internally of 165 degrees.
You should call John Eastman, maybe give him some legal advice, because you know for sure what's going on there, Laura. We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, Instacart has decided to settle a lawsuit over labor violations. That's very based, but a lot of people have given me a lot of guff around my grocery habits. They say what I do, the way that I get my groceries, is not cool. But I want to make the argument as to why that it is. So we're going to combine corporate greed with my own laziness. And decide whether or not it's cringe or base when we get back right after this.
Cringe.
If spotted owls are protected, surely Bigfoot enjoys that status.
Or base.
Because I don't want to pass out in the studio. That's bad radio. Thank you, Justin, for doing that for us. Cringe or base, a fun game we like to play every day at 1:35. It's try to decide if a cultural event is cringe, meaning or base, meaning ah. So Instacart settled about $750,000 over alleged labor violations. Now, earlier today, Laura said she wanted to do this story because she thought that I shop using Instacart, but this is indeed false.
I was wrong.
I have never used Instacart because I'm an Amazon user, so I get my groceries delivered through Amazon.
Okay, so it's not a moral high ground thing.
It's not a moral high ground thing. It's in no way, shape, or form. I think Instacart is bad. What I just prefer to go through the Amazon app, and then I order my food through the Whole Foods portion of it, and then they come and they deliver it to my house. Now, many people have said that this is giga cringe. They say that this is bad. You should go to the store and get your own groceries and you're wasting time, money, and resources. But if you do the math, it costs me $10 to have my groceries delivered and I don't own a car. So if I Uber over to Whole Foods, it's going to cost me $20. Then I have to get out. Then I have to get all my wares. Then I have to get assaulted by the two Vin Diesels who are at every single door who want to go through every single bag that I have and comment on my Honey Crisps or whatever it is. Then I have to stand there waiting for another Uber to come, put all my stuff in the back of their car, get in their car, drive back to my apartment. It's a waste of my time, money, and resources. Or for the low, low price of $10, I can have another human being who's getting tipped come and drop it off at my front door. That's why I have my groceries delivered. I also hate driving. I hate it. I'm not a fan of it. I choose to get away from it, and I don't want to do it. So I think that it's actually based that I have things delivered because I'm cutting down on traffic on the roadways. I'm providing another American with a means to make a living, and I always tip well. So I'm actually helping the planet. I'm actually making a difference, Laura, someone who plans out her grocery trips because you have to get chips from this place and dip from this place and cups from this place or whatever it is that you do with your free time, not wearing a seatbelt.
Well, don't make me sound insane, but that is exactly what I do.
Right, exactly. So
you shop a circuit for save money, right? Yeah.
So what I do is I just have everything sent to my house, and it's totally easy, and it's totally great, and I don't see why anybody, but apparently every time I bring it up, people don't like the fact that I get my groceries delivered. So,
well, I think people once are aware of the fact that you don't own a car because you don't want to put poison into the planet.
I'm not a good driver. It's just not for me. At a certain point in time, you just have to come to grips with reality. Do you know what I mean? And I will never be a driver. I'm not good at it. I'm bad at it, objectively, right?
Yeah.
It's not even like I'm like Dustin Hoffman and Rain Man bad at it. Do you know what I mean? Like,
wow.
I'm really bad at driving.
that's bad.
And I prefer not to be behind the wheel of a car. Now, some people might say, well, Jack, that's a skill that you can practice. Maybe. Were you with me when I was on Maui and I stopped in the middle of a highway to look at a bird at a blind intersection? Were you there? Because I was there. Were you there when my ex-wife was screaming at me because I decided to stop on a freeway off-ramp because I saw a mailbox a street over that I really, really liked? True story.
No, I think a grateful nation thanks you for not driving.
This is what happens in my brain. I see something that I like. I stop. I want to look at it. Now, this can be going 65 miles per hour. This can be going 25 miles per hour. It can be in a school zone. It can be in front of a library. I'm not a good driver. As a matter of fact, the amount of people that I've almost killed in parking lots because I'm looking at something else is obscene. Small children, elderly, you would not believe the amount of people whose lives I've almost taken, saved by mere inches. And my ex-wife going, whoa, 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 whoa. I cannot be behind the wheel of a car. I've accepted it about myself. It's a sadness that we must all carry together. Andrew, I see you're weeping in the other room. I see you're weeping over there. Are you a good driver, Andrew?
I think I'm the best driver.
Okay, that's good. I just don't like driving. Laura, are you a driver?
I am a driver, but not right now.
All right,
my
but
car
I'm,
broke down.
I am awful at it. And I just feel, you know, like, there are some skills that some people are really good at drinking chocolate milk, and that's their thing,
that's cool.
Right? It can be, but,
do it well.
But some of us, when we lift the glass up to our mouths, it goes all over our tailored shirts. And after about six of those or six horrific car accidents, we understand that maybe
you're not supposed to be doing that.
Probably shouldn't be doing that. Now, do I have a driver's license? Yes, I have one.
Okay.
Do I occasionally rent cars? Yes, so that other people can drive them. I rent particularly nice cars so that other people can drive them. It's not my bag, right? So I think, and moreover, I think that we ascribe too much value to the art of driving.
I think it's a wonderful thing that there is an industry out there in, whether it be the Instacart guys or the Amazon drivers who deliver food to folks. I think it's great that you can help this industry and you're supporting somebody's family. when you make a $10 contribution to having groceries delivered.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you didn't, knowing now what a bad driver you are, I'd pay the $10 myself to keep you off the road.
That's what I'm always saying. I'm saving lives every single
day.
I am a
and
hero.
Feeding a family.
I am
yes.
a hero in more ways than one.
And I bet there's a lot of people out there who are helping out the environment, because this guy's car is on the road anyway. This driver, he's out there every day.
So my mom and I went to, and Sarah went to a wedding in Austin, Texas, with 3 or 4 years ago. It was my cousin's wedding. And so we land in Austin, Texas, get a rental car. It's like one of those Jeep FJ models. You know what I'm talking about? The big ones.
Oh, like the Wagoneer kind of
it's
a thing.
Yeah, real big one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So my mom rents it, and she says, "It's too dark. I can't see. Will you drive for me?" And then I go, "Sarah should drive." And then the rental lady's like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. She's not on the insurance. Only you and Madre are on the insurance there." So I am then tasked with driving through the airport rental car onto the highway or freeway system or whatever it is they have, and then getting us to the hotel. I made it about 10 minutes outside of the airport before Sarah was like, "Just pull over.
Pull outside of the road.
Can I drive?" Because I'm going, and I fool you not, and everyone's going to laugh at me. I was going 35 miles per hour, where the speed limit is 75. Why? Because there was construction going on the side of the road, and I wanted to look at the lights. That's not a joke. I was enamored by the lights. And so I think that we have deficits in our lives, and there are things that we need to accept about ourselves, and I'm a bad driver.
I think your awareness is a wonderful gift.
Yeah,
some people would just be in denial of the fact that they shouldn't be driving.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought you meant his awareness of the things he's stopping to look at. It's no, very no. Like, stop and smell the roses.
I want to
stop and watch the blinking.
I want to look at things when I'm driving.
Pretty
I don't
things.
There are things to look at rather than, you know, this.
I want you to look at those things. I want you to put your head out the window like a dog and enjoy the sights
that's
of somebody else
Gen
drives.
Gen Z would call you a passenger princess.
That's what I am.
Oh.
Does that label vibe with you?
That's it. Most certainly does. We'll take a really quick break when we get back. No stupid questions. 888-973-5476. That's the text line. Hey, do you want to ask us about the State Department, about Gaza policy? We could talk about anything. You want to talk about the mating habits of gibbons? We could talk about that, too. It's weird. You want to ask why Andrew decided to trim his beard? It's because the weather's getting better. I answered it for you. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this.
There are no stupid questions.
Only stupid answers.
Yep.
Yes.
We're back.
Back in action. I'm horribly tired. I haven't had any caffeine for the last 3 days. Because after my heart incident, the good doctor, he says to me, he goes, "You got to stop having caffeine." And I said, "All of it?" And he said, "Yeah, you got to cut it all out of your system." And I said, "But I don't want to." And then he said, "Well, what if
you want to live, don't you?"
He goes, "Well, do you want to have another one of those arrhythmic palpitations?" And I said, "No." And he goes, "Okay, well, you got to stop drinking caffeine." And I said, "But I don't want to." So help me, Jack. What am I supposed to do when all three choices, Trump, Biden, and Bobby Kennedy, are basically grifters, and Trump and Biden are angry authoritarians that attack anyone who disagrees with them? What do I base my vote on? So this is a great question. Now, if I was lazy, I would say, well, you just vote down ticket, and there you go. You'd let your bias with the way that you want your country to look influence who you vote for in a major policy. So I'll admit my bias right now. I have a deep fear of theocrats. I have a deep fear of people not getting the access to certain medical procedures or certain doctors that are none of the state's business. I have a deep fear of my gay friends not being able to have their kids or potentially get their kids taken away from them or not have their marriages basically dissolved by the federal government. And so because of that, and because I'm an advocate for my fellow citizens, I would say the choice on who's more in favor of that than who isn't is very clear. Now, on the flip side of that, though,
it's helpful.
You also have to keep in mind, well, I'm a big 2A person, and so I don't want my guns to be taken away, because what am I going to do if someone takes away my reading gun? I won't be able to read anything. So you have to basically balance out where your biases are and then basically make that decision. I'll tell you right now, if someone came to me and they said, "I'm voting for Donald Trump," I could convince them not to in about 20 minutes. Flat. I mean, it's not very difficult to convince somebody not to vote for Donald Trump. You just have to kind of show them, like, this is, so you say that you're a fiscal conservative. Yes. Okay. So this is the $7.3 trillion he added to the deficit. Do you like that? Okay. So you say that you're a pro two-way person. here's Trump's bump stock ban that is now being overturned in the Supreme Court. Like, what you have to do with Trump people is basically show them that the lie that he's told them for so many years is dissolving in front of their eyes. Christie in Oregon, this is an honest question that I want to understand. Why are we using they, them for trans people? Those are pronouns that have been used forever to designate groups of people. Now we can designate a group of any type of people or a single trans person. This is very confusing. How about a new pronoun for trans people? So they, them, if you go back to the American Dictionary 1920, is actually considered to be a pronoun, a singular pronoun. Mm-hmm. It became pluralistic post-1940 in the way that we use it now. So when you talk about pluralism as referring to a multiple set of people, like Laura, ask me how Brian is doing today.
How is Brian doing today?
They are doing well. That is grammatically correct, right? Now, some people might prefer it to be he is doing well or what, or him is doing well, whatever it is. But it is grammatically correct to say they are doing well. When we talk about they, them people or like a non-binary distinction, that's not necessarily trans. That's non-binary, which we would throw more in like the queer circle of things.
Exactly. But trans respectfully request to be issued.
They demand it obnoxiously, Spike. Come
some,
on.
They
obnoxiously demand that you capitulate to their presuppositions about gender.
Trans man wants to be a him and a he, not a they, them.
Yeah.
It's your point about being a non-binary reference.
Yeah. I mean, like, you can use the... I don't think it's really all that confusing, but that's because I've got lots of non-binary friends. It doesn't make any difference to me. I'm sure it's mostly weird to people because when you're rigid about things like that, mm-hmm. it makes sense. But then you meet a couple of non-binary people. Like, my very good non-binary friend, Ash, it's really easy when people say, how are they doing? I say, Ash is doing well. If you don't want to use they, them pronouns because you think it's ridiculous, I don't blame you. You can use their first name. Their first name is always a healthy alternative because that is also grammatically correct because we were referring to the person in the singular. What a great question from Christy in Oregon. Wow. English is fun, isn't it?
That's why I majored in it.
I'm having fun.
That's why I'm here.
Laura, did Jack see the make appointment to see a cardiologist? Dr. Z is a brilliant physician. However, it's optimal to see a cardio with Hicks of addiction. What?
Guess that means history?
History of addiction.
Have questions. That's a new pronoun right there.
Ah, yeah. Pronouns abound. Dr. Z is he's the best kind of doctor, and I have other doctors besides Dr. Z. But it's just easier for me to get a hold of Dr. Z. Does that make sense?
Like, sure.
There are other physicians that I can see. There's not a whole lot of physicians in the old Rolodex that pick up their phone on their anniversary.
There's not a lot of doctors in the Rolodex that are taking new patients, too.
Right. Yeah, so, that's the other thing on top of all of that. Someone wants to know if Spike and the Impalers are still a thing. Buddy.
We're still a thing. We've got dates this summer. You can look at Facebook for find out more. That's all I'm allowed to say.
Really?
I mean, come on. I don't pay the station to promote the band.
I got dates coming up for Spike and the Impalers for everybody. Hold on. Let's look this up. The Impalers dates, because I'm going to be there, and so I don't have to.
I'll ask Brian if I can let you know when the next dates are. You can go to the Facebook page.
You guys are playing. You guys are playing tonight? No, that's February.
Yeah. Whoops.
What are the dates here? Come on now, buddy.
We don't have a date till August, I think. So,
August what?
I think first.
What time?
I don't know. I don't know where. Can't you let me just slide being ignorant? Come on.
All right. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right. What's the Facebook for Spike and the Impalers?
Spike and the Impalers. It's a Facebook, our band's Facebook page.
This is
official fan page.
Being coy, official Mr. O'Neill. Very, very coy about this. Yeah. Speaking of, by the way, Mr. John Curley coming on a couple of you. Washington Post says, we can decipher a man's mind, but can you decipher the alpha man's mind in John Curley? Keith Oberman last week said that there's hope for Trump's assassination. The only reason we want to talk about this is because a Stanford student called for Biden's assassination. So what's the deal with everybody now talking about assassination? Did you know that John Kennedy, these four assassination attempts were made on him? Do you know that?
I had no idea.
Only one of them were successful.
That one I knew of.
Isn't that crazy? We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this.